Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today we discuss technical diagramming with systems architect Maya. Let's go. First question. You've spent 10 hours slogging over a sequence diagram that should have taken 5. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board. And if I'm being honest, Miro would probably cut that time down by half. You know, with its AI tools and ready-to-go templates.
Next, your diagrams become so bulky, it's more complex than the solar system. But all it takes is a few clicks and...
It's Miro. I've used those technical shape packs way too many times.
Now, the final question. Everyone's brought in, but you have to make all these tasks all the way over in Jira. But wait, it's done. Is it...
Miro, easy with its two-way Jira sync. Easy to plot dependencies. Everyone always knows what's up.
And she's done it.
For a limited time, visit Miro.com/diagram now and get a free business plan trial to unlock even more features like advanced shapes, dependency mapping, and two-way Jira syncing. Get started today at Miro.com/diagram. Now.
Here you are. BPMs high, sweat dripping, body moving, tongue panting. You're working hard, real hard, and you're thirsty. You need vitamins, nutrients for peak performance and energy.
And your plants do too. Aw, I mean, just look at the little guy. Water-soluble plant food from Miracle-Gro is full of essential nutrients. Just a little scoop into your watering can and boom, instant feeding and bigger, more beautiful plants. It's kind of like a sports drink for your plants. You may have to suffer from heat, but your plants do not.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to another Tour Life. You got myself and Yuli as always. Silas is not joining us this week, so it's just us. This is pre-recorded, obviously. We can't go live, unfortunately, today. But Silas will be back, I believe, in a week or two. So next week will be pre-recorded as well. And I think I'm going to try, obviously, next week we have Worlds coming up. So I think I'm going to try to maybe snag one or two interviews leading into Worlds going into next week. It will also be the first day of the World Championship. So, Yuli, we got to figure that out. I'm not sure exactly how that's going to work right now, but we'll figure that out. With that being said, though, we do actually are currently looking for two new positions at Tour Life. So those two positions, the first one being someone that has adequate experience and also interest in social media. We're looking for someone to potentially help us run the social media accounts on Tour Life. So if that is something that is interesting of you, whether it be Instagram clips, tweets, all these type of things to promote the show, but also to show clips and highlights from the show, you can email Brad, B-R-A-D, at foundationdis.com. Email your resume. Let us know what would make you, why you would be a good fit to become our first, I guess, employee, if you will, of Tour Life. We're trying to expand a little bit, and I got a little gnat right now that I need to just destroy. But we're trying to expand the show a little bit and have, especially when me and Yuli are on tour, having someone that can help kind of run some stuff for us is going to be great. And then also, if you are someone that is interested in producing the live show itself, Silas isn't going anywhere, but on days like this where Silas can't go, it would be nice to also have someone that, you know, we can plug in so that way the show can kind of run normal. So if you want to, you know, dip your toes in live producing Tour Life, also send your resume to brad@foundationdis.com. All right, enough off the top there. Yuli, what's going on, man? You're back home.
I'm back home. Man, I'm back home for a couple days. It was a much-needed couple-day break for sure to reset before the World Championships. We had, I mean, you and I were both on the road for, what, like a month or something without being home.
Yeah.
It was a long time, right after getting back from Europe, too. So home for 3 days and then flying to Vermont on Friday. And, you know, we're going to get our grind back on. But, no, it's good to be home.
Yeah.
That's all I got going. I'm just kind of digressing and relaxing here at the homestead.
I'll probably have to do like a walkthrough at some point of the place we're staying at, because this is one of the nicest Airbnbs we've had. We have one of the bedrooms has like military beds almost, of where there's 6 bunk beds in there, so we can almost house an entire family just in one bedroom. But this place is massive. It's got a huge backyard. We're probably going to put the practice baskets up back there to get some practice in, maybe shoot some fun videos and content. But yeah, we're just about 18, 20 minutes. We're in Stowe getting ready for the World Championships up at Smuggler's Notch. So I've been able to already get two practice rounds in. Well, two and a half practice rounds in. I've played both courses. We'll do a little preview later on this show, but we have a lot to discuss this week. Obviously, me and Yuli will do our own tournament recap of what went down for us at D-Glow. Then we'll go through all the craziness that happened on the MPO side, talk about a new winner, a big winner on the FPO side. Then the European Disc Golf Championships went down. We'll do a little update on the Disc Golf Pro Tour standings because as of right now, there's only two more events, the World Championships and MVP Open. Last two events to get points outside of a couple silver events, but those are the last two big events to get points leading into the Tour Championship. We'll do the Worlds preview, and we've got some listener questions at the very, very end of the show. And that will be it. So, Yuli, How did D-Glow go for you?
About what I thought. I knew I hadn't practiced, I don't think. I think I did. I think I practiced last week Wednesday before we got on the show, and it was like I had a feeling it was going to be, I was excited about it, but I had a feeling it was going to be tough. I mean, the place is long. There's a lot of OB. The OB wasn't the problem. It was long. Very, very long, and being the player that I am, I don't have the big distance, so I have to be extra perfect, especially out there. Like, things have to just, like, I have to hit every shot kind of perfect into the right spots to be able to get up some of those big hills, and I wasn't crisp, really, every round. I kind of got behind the eight ball early a few times to where, you know, I basically needed to go bogey-free every round, and I had too many bogeys. It's not that hard to take pars out there at all, but when you're pushing for birdies and good scores, they can creep up on you for sure. I found myself having a few rollaways that cost me on some shots, and I ended up taking like 45th, which really I feel like wouldn't be that bad if we had a full field. Obviously, we didn't. We had only the top like 75 or 80 people of the best players on tour.
You would have just added in like 40 other just rando kind of people.
It would have, yeah, I mean, you know, it might
looked
not
a little
be
bit
bad.
Probably better.
And there was a huge gap. Like, you could really see a gap between, I was looking at it, honestly, at
massive.
Especially at like people who played really great, middle of the pack, bottom cashers, and then a bunch of people who, I mean, good people didn't cash, but they were still well under par, it seemed like. And then there was, like, where I was, like, below me, you could tell, like, there wasn't a lot of big power throwers, or right where I was, even above me, not a lot of power throwers out there. And so it was just a place that I just didn't feel comfortable. I wish I had another shot at it, because I felt like I learned a lot playing the tournament of where to go, where to not to go, where to kind of lay up. Game plan wasn't quite crisp. I think it was too new of a course. But that's where I was, yeah. I ended up missing cash by, like, I think it ended up being 7. I was 2 under. Last cash was 9 under, which was pretty good score, honestly.
Yeah. No, it's, I think some of the changes, we'll kind of talk about here in a little bit. But I think, for the most part, they made the course more challenging for players that play bad, that were playing poorly. They didn't really, outside of maybe hole 16 and hole 18, those were really the only two holes that I thought got harder for the entire field. Every other hole that they added OB or changed the basket placements or whatever it may have been, that really only affected bad shots. They didn't really affect good shots and really didn't change any players' strategy going into those holes. So it definitely played more difficult for the players at the bottom of the field. And my tournament was, it was very unfortunate timing for me, because where I'm sitting right now in the standings, I was really looking forward to having a good finish at this tournament to really boost myself up the standings. Last year, I believe I took ninth or tied for ninth, something. I think it was tied for ninth. So I felt had success at this course, felt really good about this course, but unfortunately got sick, got really sick actually, to the point of where I was kind of scared that it was COVID and that I was going to have to obviously drop out of the tournament if it was COVID. Luckily, COVID test came back negative, all good there. Which I think ended up me just having like a really bad flu. And what I've noticed too, I don't get sick very often, but what I've noticed now is since I've got Lyme disease, every time I get sick now, it's way worse. Like I'm still dealing with the congestion and nasal stuff.
Yeah.
And this is over a week now. And I just feel like my immune system takes so much longer to fight things off and also reacts to things a lot differently now that I have Lyme. So those first couple days, man, absolutely brutal. I was on the fence on day one, even like going into the day. I was on the fence of whether or not I even should play, but I'm like, I need these points so freaking bad. Maybe I can just, you know, get through the first round and, you know, rest the whole bunch and feel better for the rest and fight back and get some points. But unfortunately, like day one was literally the worst that could have happened. So day one, you know, I wake up, I'm super achy. I've got like the chills. I've got the, I'm super lethargic. I've got no energy, right? And so I'm warming up. Disc is not popping out of my hand at all. Like it's coming out 70%. Like I have no power at all. And I'm like, all right, I just need to get through this round. Let's hopefully play this round in like 3 hours. And I had an early tee time. I was teeing off at 10 something. So I was like, well, I was one of the first cards out. I was like, let's get this round done, get home, get in bed, and just try to recover. Well, we get to hole two, and I'm about to throw my upshots on hole two, horn. I'm like, oh gosh. We proceeded for the next, I think, hour and a half to 2 hours to potentially play again and then a horn. Like I fully warmed up again because they said we were going to play, walked out to the hole, and you know, I think it was like 3 or 4 minutes before they were going to give us the horn to play, lightning literally struck on top of the property. So horn comes down, another 30 minute delay. So it was this nastiness of like cold, windy, wet rain, and I'm like having to warm up and not warm up and then warm up and then not warm up, and it was the last thing I wanted to do. So I was able to just complete the round, which I was very happy with. Might have been my first round ever, I don't know, someone can go fact check me, might have been my first round ever without any birdies. I had zero birdies all round. I took a triple on hole three. That was unfortunately the first tee shot I had after like the hour and a half, 2 hour rain delay, or, you know, thunder, lightning delay was hole three. And I just yanked my shot OB. And then my second one ended up going OB on the right at the very, very end. So took a triple there. And I think I had two other bogeys throughout the round. So I shot five over on day one, but I was like, all right, I got through it. It's fine. Day two didn't feel any better, and the wind was absolutely. What was your tee time day two? Do you know?
Right, I was two over par.
Were you morning
or three over? I was three.
Okay,
over
so par, you're probably. So you're pretty early then.
Yeah.
It was crazy windy when we were warming up. There was just gusts that were like ripping through at like 30 miles per hour. One thing that I think would be really cool in the future would be to see if we ever do go to morning afternoon tee times on day one and then afternoon morning tee times on day two. You can actually see how the fields play based off of the tee times. That's something you do in golf, and it's a very interesting stat because I think in this scenario, if you did play early on round one and you played early on round two, granted, the people that played early in round one were all the worst players in the field, the way that they did tee times. Yep. But those were the more difficult times to play. And that would just be an interesting thing to see as tournaments go. It'd be another storyline to talk about, like, oh, this person had the worst draw and they still were able to win the tournament, right?
Yeah.
But day two was crazy wins. I got three birdies. Day three was starting to feel like a little bit better, I guess, but still had no power. Three birdies. Day four, the achiness and lethargicness and my power came, all that stuff kind of went away. My power came back, but the congestion was still there. The cough was all that. But I was like, dude, let me just take some stronger medicine. I felt a little bit better and got 10 birdies on day four. So I finished with a good round. Unfortunately, bogeyed the final hole, which always sucks. Finishing your tournament with a missed circle one putt like that. But that's how my tournament went. It kind of sucked, honestly, quite frankly. But at the end of the day, I think it was something I can build on, because I don't think any tournament here on for the rest of the season is going to be as hard as that for me. So it's something I can kind of like get that mental,
right.
Build off of that, I guess you can say. Another story that I have from the tournament, I thought my disc got stolen. I don't know if you saw that. I tweeted out, someone came up to me when I was practicing and said, "Hey man, have you picked up your disc from Lost and Found?" I was like, "No, I went over there and looked. I had nothing." He's like, "Oh, I saw it there earlier." And I was like, "No." And then he ran over there and then came back and was like, "Oh yeah, it was there earlier. It's not there now." And I was like, "All right, well, hopefully I get like a DM from someone being like, hey, I found your disc in Lost and Found. Let's meet up," which I hate, by the way. But I was hoping for that. And then I tweet out something along the lines of being like, "Hey, if you stole my disc, I hope the worst happens to you. Like, you have the worst disc golf karma." Or I was basically saying like, too, like, if anyone sees a white roach with my name on it, know that that person stole that disc. They are a thief. Make sure you watch them with a careful eye. And then it happened to just show up in Lost and Found the next day. So I don't know how or what or who, but my disc got back. So that was super nice. So I lost no discs. Did you lose any discs over the week? Because that course, you can lose discs.
No, I didn't lose any discs.
Leaving D-Glo with no disc loss is always a good sign. All right, let's jump in to what went down. What was some of your biggest takeaways from the tournament?
Let me think here. Biggest takeaways from the tournament. I think it's like the longest, hardest course I've ever played in my life. I think that's one.
Do you think it was a fair challenge?
I've been thinking about that, and I do think it was a fair challenge. I really do, because when I'm looking at the scores, like 5 under a round is a really good score and very obtainable for really anybody in the field. And that got you, what did that get you? Probably pretty close to top 10. Probably top 10, honestly.
I would have finished you tied for 7th.
There you go. So with that happening, and then I felt like we were talking about this 7 to 8 under a round was going to win you the tournament. I think that was the number. So I think it's just a really tough course. The one thing that I was surprised about is I thought that there would be more really low scores and more really high scores, like for the same person, you know what I mean? Somebody going like 7 down and then 2 over or something at the top. And that really never happened. It was like, if you shot like the front nine, you just always shot seven.
I think the front nine might be a little soft. Right. And so there's a lot of holes out there where taking a bogey is kind of tough. But birdie is feasible. And so I think that's where, if they could holes 15 through 18, if they could figure out a way of like, hey, how do we make most of the course play like these holes? Then I think you would have something. Because if you just look kind of down the scoreboard of how players played, you know, I don't want to call anyone out, but I just popped on Kyle Klein's final round here. Kyle Klein was, 6 under through 7 holes, finished 3 under.
Yeah.
He after seven holes, never got another birdie again, and then doubled 16 and bogeyed 18. So, and that's not, that's not uncommon. You've got Gavin Babcock, same thing, 6 under through seven holes, and then finishes the last stretch at 4 over. So there was a lot of people, and even if you go to our leaders here, you look at Simon. Simon played the last four holes 1 under. Eagle played the last four holes even. And then Chris and Cole played the last four holes both 1 over. So even the guys that were playing the best struggled.
It reminded me of Sula on how you really had to just come out and get like 6-7 under on
firing.
The front nine. Otherwise, the back nine could get you. And I'm wondering if that's like, I don't know. I don't know if I like mismatching courses like that. You know what I mean? Like front nine really easy, back nine really hard, or front nine really hard, back nine really easy. I'm not sure how I feel about that. It's like,
yeah, I wouldn't say I would. I think the contract, this contract was. Yeah, I would say this contrast was a little bit more significant, like, than I would say you probably should go for. Now, hole three is a challenging hole. Hole three is not an easy hole by any means, but the wind was super down, right? The wind was really only an issue on round two, and the leaders, the wind had significantly died by the time they teed off compared to what it was for the rest of the field earlier, where I think we were throwing into like a 25 mile headwind, which makes that hole super dicey. But outside of that, on the front nine, there really isn't really any holes that are super, super tough.
Yeah. Yeah. I wish you could just like take 17 and replace it with like hole three. And flip-flop them, and then take 14 flip-flop and replace them. It with like seven. And then have like a few tough,
just kind of change up a couple of them.
Because there's a couple, like the one that Calvin eagled, 10. No.
That hole's hard. No, 11. Hard. Or no, yeah, it was 11. 10. It was 10.
Yeah, yeah. 10's a hard shot.
But hard to birdie.
But there's no, yeah, it's like the easiest par on the planet.
Correct.
Yes. Really hard.
Very, birdie, very though. Challenging. Yeah, you have to throw two really good shots.
Yep.
And really just the second shot has to be really freaking good to even give yourself a look. Yep. But the majority of people, you can just spray your tee shot off that one. But let's talk a little bit about Simon here. Simon, back in the winner's circle, wins again, goes 11 under, 10 under on the weekend to pull off the win. He wasn't by any means out of it. There was a whole bunch of people in the mix for the first two rounds. But he just absolutely boat raced the field on the weekend, just shooting a perfect 10 under par, no bogeys, final round, played really, really well. He was first in C1 in reg in the field, second in strokes gained T to green, third in strokes gained C1X, first in birdie percentage at 50%, and the big storyline around all of Simon's play was hole 16. So I kind of want to jump into that now of what ended up happening on hole 16. This was from Simon's words. He said, "I was in a fortunate situation where I got Eagle to throw first. Eagle was only two back, and I just told myself that if Eagle goes OB, then the smartest play is just to try and throw as hard as I can at the basket and try to go OB long. Because you get a drop basically from like 10 feet. I never thought of that game plan before I stepped up to that hole, but in the moment it all came together and I think it was the right play." So we talked about this, Yuli, last week. We talked about when we found out that the drop zone on hole 16, even though it was an island hole, the drop zone was not mandatory. We mentioned that this could be an issue coming down the stretch. Now, it literally worked exactly the way that we basically talked about, of how that tee shot now comes really stressful to Simon, to now all of a sudden it comes to a super easy shot. Now he said, I don't know if he mentioned it being a hard shot going long OB. I don't think he did say that. No, he didn't. Yeah, he said throw hard. That's an easy shot. If you step up to that tee pad and you're like, I'm just going to try throw OB long, I rate that a 2.5 out of 10 difficulty. And the only reason it's not a 1 is because of the situation of him playing to win. Would you agree? Not hard.
I'm trying to think. It's so, not that hard, no. No, because I thought about doing the same thing final round, honestly, because I'm like, nothing I was doing was working. It's kind of a fluky shot any way you look at it, unless you throw an absolute dime piece down the right fairway. I ended up playing the left fairway with the sidearm flex the last two rounds because I missed the island going down the right side the first round. So, yeah, I don't think it's hard at all. I mean, the play – of course, I thought it would be ridiculous if he didn't do that, if he didn't just rip it past the back. That's what I was thinking when I was kind of commentating on it on Jomez because that's the first time that I saw it.
Yep.
I was not surprised at
– Yeah, no – And looking at his previous scores on that hole, he doubled the first day with two OBs. So, going OB on his drive, and then I'm assuming trying to make the putt and his putt going OB as well. He bogeyed it on day two and then ends up parring it on the third day, throwing it into circle two and then missing the putt. So he didn't have great success on that hole either. It wasn't like he was stepping up. And like you said, it's not a hole because some people are like, why wouldn't he just throw for the birdie and just try to like end it there? No. If you have a two-shot lead going into hole 17 and 18, you pretty much have ended it. Birdieing 17 and 18 back-to-back is not an easy feat. Not that many people did it. The only people actually to do it the final day was Jake Hebenheimer, Gannon Burr, and shout out to Eric Oakley also did it. So three people in the entire field birdied it. Both 17, 18.
18's easy to play for par. Very easy. 17, not so easy to play for par.
Tee shot's tough.
The tee shot is very tough. So two shots going into the last two holes, going par. You're probably going to win. But 17, you go out of bounds off the tee, that's not a guaranteed safe shot off the tee. So little pushback on that. Little pushback.
Yeah. So you've got the announcers going absolutely wild about this play. Now, I don't know if they didn't know about this as an option. One thing I will say that sometimes happens with the live commentary is someone will say something or someone will see something and then they just will try to make that a trend. So throwing OB is normally never something that we're trying to do. There's a couple holes where, maybe we throw a roller and we're like, you know what? If it goes 500 feet long, that's fine because there's OB 20 feet behind the basket. I can just have it tap in par.
Yeah.
There's few holes like that because in my opinion, those holes are flawed the way that they're designed. This was one of those holes. And then it all of a sudden just turned out to be like they were starting to talk about people throwing OB on purpose. And like Eagle goes OB on 18. And they're talking about like, oh, I bet he did that on purpose. No one's trying to throw OB long on 18 on the tee shot on purpose. So I didn't really understand the theory behind that. But this was the smart play from Simon. I think it was the play that if people listened to our podcast last week or watched coverage of people's practice rounds, I'm sure people talked about it. This wasn't probably that surprising only to those that we're kind of in the dark of this being an actual play and an actual option there. So smart play by Simon and ultimately ends up taking it down. Eagle honestly had a great tournament though. Eagle played great, very, very solid. He was actually probably the most consistent out of everyone, contending there at the end. He shot 57, 59, 59, 58. So super, super consistent from Eagle across all four rounds. Biggest issues final round for Eagle. His putt on hole one ends up hitting the, elevated basket, rolls OB. Super unfortunate to take a bogey there. And then he ends up going OB on his drives on hole 16, on hole 17, and hole on 18. And that basically just completely ended it for him. He wasn't out of it by any means. No. He ends up losing by three. So he ends up, you know, birding two of the last three holes and taking a par. Now we're all of a sudden in a playoff situation. So he wasn't out of it by any means. But what were your thoughts on Eagle? He plays really good at this tournament.
Yeah, I thought he played good. I think, one second.
No, you're good. Just a little for our audio listeners. Just a little camera update. Little camera update. We're back though. All good.
Yeah, no, I thought Eagle played really good. I think the biggest thing about that whole round that I saw, that really set the tone for the whole round was the fact that Simon starts off the round with a 60-footer right in the heart. Eagle misses his putt low, goes out of bounds, 2-shot lead right there. Bam. Huge momentum shift right off the bat. Simon's comfortable, plays with the lead the whole entire time, doesn't relinquish it, even with a couple things not going his way down the stretch. And then, yeah, of course, 16, 17, 18, it's always nice to see your competitor when you have a lead go out of bounds and you don't have to have any stress at all. So, I felt like it was from the first hole. Like, that set the tone for the whole round. Simon felt comfortable. He had the lead. Everybody was chasing him. I think, honestly, I don't think Eagle was the one putting the pressure on, really. I think he was battling Eagle, but seeing what Calvin was doing in the middle of the round had to have made him a bit nervous. If he knew... Yeah. You know what I mean? Because he's tied with actually Calvin. Calvin's three holes ahead. But the thing with that course is three holes ahead on the back nine is like you're tied. Like those birdies are so tough to get. A few of those birdies are so tough to get that three ahead and being tied with them, like it's really hard to find birdies back there. As we saw, I mean, what did he get? He missed 16, he missed 18, missed 17. Did he par them all?
Simon?
Yeah.
You know what, or Calvin. Oh, yeah. Simon on the back nine, only birdied 10, 12, 14, and 15. And 15, so 15's a really good birdie. 15's a really good birdie. And but 14 and 12, you're probably looking to birdie on those holes. And then 10's a really good birdie as well. So he did get a couple tough ones. But yeah.
Right. But you know, with Calvin being that far ahead and blah, 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 I felt like that was where the pressure was, even though Eagle's on there and Eagle's always close. But it didn't look like he had the fire. You know what I mean? He wasn't knocking down the big putts until 13 down the hill. I thought that was a big momentum shift because he has the lead at three. Eagle knocks down the 60-footer after trying to go Annie over the entire forest. That was insane. If you haven't watched coverage, go check that hole out. That was nuts. And then he comes alive. He's only two back again, and we got a ball game. But the thing was, 14 up the hill, easy birdie for both of them. And then the
they both crushed their drives, which definitely helps.
15 down the hill, very tough, very tough hole. And then, of course, the storyline, we already played that out, 16, 17, 18. So from hole one and then hole 13 were the momentum shifts, I felt like.
No, I think, you know, I think most of the front nine, we've talked about, like, you know, how do we buff up the front nine? But I want to talk about hole 15 real quick, because I think one thing this course is really missing right now is a par five. I don't think, you know, high level courses should be without par fives. You know, at least one. I would ideally like to see two. I think 15 have the same tee pad, have the same basket. You throw OB down the left, you throw OB down the right, and then all of a sudden you could turn that into a par five. I think people can go aggressive off the tee if they want to, but I think with OB on both sides like that, most people are going to lay back and not even try to push it into those tree line. And then those that even push it into the tree line, now your second shot is way riskier, obviously, with OB on the left and OB on the right.
Yeah.
I think that could be a cool change moving forward.
No, I like that. And I think, like, even if you add the out of bounds on the left and right all the way down the fairway, being able to open it up a little bit at the green around that, open it up because there is some natural rough around there. that's fine.
Yep.
But off the tee, if you go out of bounds, I'd like to see them put you at that drop zone.
Oh, interesting.
Which is a short tee. That way we are not looking for disc, and then it's an easy spot. You go out of bounds, you get your disc, you go straight to the drop zone. There's no backup.
Huh, interesting.
There's nobody looking. Well, I think you crossed right here. I can't see. It was so high in the trees, I couldn't tell. And you're all wishy-washy where people are going out of bounds, and then it just kind of speeds up play. So you're, if you go out of bounds, you're bogeying and push people through that hole.
Yeah, I mean, I think even if you go out of bounds without a drop zone, you're probably bogeying on the tee shot. It'd be very hard to get up and down from pretty much any of those spots that you most shots are going to go be there. All right, Chris Dickerson, a name that we really haven't talked about that much. He's had a very quiet season, but going back and looking at it, he's kind of coming on strong just at the perfect time as well, with Worlds being just around the corner next week. GMC, he came second to Ricky down the stretch, so a tournament that he has had success in. He looks like he's kind of in good form right now. He had 6 top 10s this season, 3 of those coming in the last 4 events. So he's definitely kind of trending upwards right now. Yeah. He had a great tournament. 60, 58, 59, 58. Also very consistent across all 4 rounds, finishing tied for third with Cole Radalin, which I think at this point we got to talk about Cole being like the real deal. You know, similar to how we were talking about Gannon a few years ago, which is crazy to think that, you know, it's been that long since, or, you know, that short of a time, I guess, when Gannon just popped on the scene and now he's, you know, a perennial player. But I think Cole needs to be discussed in that same way going into next year, of where this is someone that has potential every week to go out and win. He's putting himself in multiple positions to do that. He already has a win. And tying Chris Dickerson at for T3, I mean, great performance there from Cole.
Yeah, especially after the win over at Ledgestone and then going 14th, I believe, at Idlewild, then popping back right up and then at third place. Cole's good, man. I mean, you don't win at a place like Ledgestone, Woods, Open, OB, accuracy, make your putts. You don't win at a place like that with not having the full package. I mean, if you look at like the resume that Ledgestone brings, like, you have to be good at everything. You have to keep it in bounds. You have to kind of be level-headed. It's a mental grind. That was what I was most impressed with him, is that he has a mind for it, right? There's a lot of people on tour that are very good, but they're missing like that tough mentality, right? And I feel like that's something that Cole has.
And I think this year to me is like we're building the like top of the tour is what this feels like right now, is because we still have some of these newer players that bounce up, like Isaac Robinson. That wasn't a name that was discussed that much 2 years ago. We're starting to create more and more of these staple players, of where going into next year it's like, oh yeah, these guys are dudes, like these are the dudes. And I think Cole now has put himself in that conversation of being one of the dudes on tour. And it's exciting to kind of see, like, going into next year, like, who are going to be the new guys that, you know, we are now talking about every week. All right, moving down a little bit more, we have Calvin Heimberg, another top 5 finish for Calvin. This dude is always at the top of the leaderboard, it seems like, every single week. You know, if he doesn't go 2 over par through the last 6 holes, I don't know what. I mean, he ends up losing by 6. I don't know if that was enough. I mean, he was trying to do everything he could. He threw in on hole 6 for Eagle. He threw in on hole 10 for Eagle. That was probably the craziest 5-hole stretch on tour so far this season. Yeah. 7 under through 5 holes. I mean, that's an absolute nuts stretch right there.
Do better than perfect on holes you can't do better than perfect. Like, yeah, I could see somebody like going, you know, 6 under in that stretch with a throw in, and you being like, that's crazy for him to keep it going. But to do it 2 times in a 5-hole stretch, bro. And one was sidearm, one was backhand.
I mean,
to cap it off.
Yeah. And again, one was on probably, you know, one of the more difficult shots. Hole 10, second shot, is probably one of the more difficult shots on the entire course. Like the ceilings, like, I mean, he obviously went through a little trees and a little leaves at the very, very end. But like the ceiling is not massive there. To get no. to get up to the basket, you have to challenge the ceiling. So ridiculous by Calvin, as always. Someone to obviously be on the lookout this week or next week for Worlds. And then rounding out your top 10, you have Kevin Jones, Isaac Robinson, Ricky Wysocki, Anthony Barella, and Jake Hebenheimer and Gannon Burr. A couple names wanted, you know, spotlight a little bit. Did you see Ricky Wysocki's caddy?
No.
You did not see Ricky? I think that door is locked, Gooseman. Wow, that door is not locked.
Are you talking about
Never
Zach?
Mind. Our front door? No, I'm talking about Gooseman right now because he just walked in the front door and it was not locked. So that is a little spooky, but he is in.
No, I'm saying Ricky's caddy.
Ricky's caddy this week.
Zach?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He had the roller cart and then he had a full bag as well. He was double dutying it. He had double duties.
Really?
It was nuts. You guys have both rooms down the second level. Yeah. He was, I mean, on a course like Toboggan, to have to do bag on the back and roller cart, the dude was getting massive amounts of calories burned per day, I'm sure. Especially that final day. That final day was so hot. It was so hot that final day. His calves must be absolutely on fire. So maybe Ricky is giving him like a nice little calf massage or something. Kevin Jones continues to have some solid play. Kevin Jones, thoughts on Kevin's performance the last couple weeks?
Training
pretty solid.
At the right time. I mean, he looked good. It looked like at the beginning of the season he was having problems with his backhand, honestly. Like his timing was off. A lot of early releases, a lot of late releases. I played with him in Europe. Same thing. And he just seems like he's trending. When that dude's on, like he makes every putt. I think if it's calm out, that dude's fire. I think if it gets windy, kind of tough.
That's
he likes
he
to throw
struggles
those very
a little bit.
Understable discs. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? I think he fared well the second round over there, and he played very well during the win. So if he can figure that stuff out, he has that super stable X1 that he kind of flexes around. I'm kind of rambling on about him, but he's just trending at the right direction. He's trending at the right time.
Yeah. Jake Hebenheimer, great final round, shoots 11 under par to move up 19 spots and into the top 10. Fantastic job. There's a lot of names on here we can go through that didn't cash just because, again, we talked about the field was 73 people. So the cash line was like ridiculously, we said it was nine. So you top T28 because there was three people tied for 28th. You had to get top 28 to cash at this event. So obviously lots of top players ended up not cashing at this event. But one name that I think some people, you know, we mentioned was playing in this tournament. I think some people were very curious to kind of see how his skills would translate. Now he is playing multiple events as well, so this won't be the first and only time we see him. But Manubu Kajiyama, who currently is the highest rated player. I think ratings are dumb. I will continue to say I think ratings are dumb. But he ends up finishing in 66th place out of the 73 players, 41 shots off the lead. I don't think this course suits his game. You know, I think this is a definitely more on the power side. I don't know if I'm assuming that probably isn't his go-to.
The dude rips.
Just because he isn't the – oh, he does rip.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I was trying. Well, then I don't know why he didn't play well, or I was trying to give him. I was trying to give him something. He ends up shooting 65, 70, 69, 67. Okay, we'll leave it on that. Jet lag. I think he's playing this upcoming week, so we'll see. He's also playing at Worlds, so we'll see what happens. But yeah, don't look too much into ratings, folks. All right, course changes. What did you think about the three different basket locations for those holes?
Loved them.
Fan, like, is that something that you want to see more of?
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. Give it a different look.
I think especially, and the fans too. I think playing the same course 4 days in a row, you know, I love four-day tournaments. I think four-day tournaments, especially for like the Elite Plus, the majors, the big tournaments of the year, I think four rounds is definitely the best way to do it. I love it. I love it for all aspects, and I think we should continue to not just with basket locations, but even mandos, even tee pads. Let's continue to push the envelope of changing courses day by day and just see what ends up, because I agree with you. I thought as a player, I thought it was incredible, and I've only really seen positive things from the people that ended up watching as well on you know, the different basket locations. So I would love to see them even do it more. Maybe next year let's do nine holes. And maybe D-Glo is not the only tournament to do it, right? Maybe let's have some other courses look at D-Glo and be like, hey, that worked pretty well for them. What can we do? Thoughts on hole 18, because what you said, I agree with. Hole 18, if you play for par, very easy to par. So I don't like that. I don't like the idea that like you can just throw three really simple shots to, you know, win a tournament on hole 18. So what are your thoughts on this? The tee shot goes up the hill and you've got that big landing area right there that you're trying to land. Then you've got those two trees that you can go either in between the two trees or wide of those trees. At those two trees, cut the OB line and then make a gap, a force carry from those two trees to the next landing zone, which is like, you know, 100 feet outside the basket. So that way, if you throw a bad tee shot, everyone was just chipping to that landing strip, like that was in the middle, to where they could just chip a sidearm really easily to the basket. Let's take away that landing strip in the middle. Let's make that all OB and force people now to either throw a more difficult shot all the way over, or now you're just like laying up to the tree and then trying to get up and down from, you know, 300 feet, 325 feet instead of, you know, 250, 225. What are your thoughts on that?
I don't mind that. I don't mind that. Yeah. I think, see, I have a little pushback sometimes when you talk about pars too easy. I feel like there should be a way to play a hole for par. There should be, because there's like,
yes,
that, because that in golf, like that's like something that's a skill, is to be able to understand the course, play your iron to this spot, play to the safe side of the green to putt it for par. Like that's how tournaments are won on the PGA Tour. And so I feel like there has to be like playing.
There's still stress though. That's the thing is like there's still is stress in that regard. I think if you stepped up the whole 18 and you're like, I'm playing this for par, I don't know how much stress you have.
I think this.
None of those shots are stressful.
I think it's just too short of a hole. That's the problem. I think it's a really tough par four to get birdie, but I just think that like holes like that, they're just tough birdies. And I think that if a longer hole in that same design on a longer hole, bogey's staring you right in the eye. But you can still get par, but par is also tough. You know what I mean? When it's a bit farther, because then you're having to throw. Anytime a professional player at our level has to throw a 250-foot shot to get into a perfect position, it's the easiest thing he ever did. Like, if I can go 250, 250, 250, I outdrove that hole. You get what I mean? Like, and so I'm never in trouble, because 250 feet is cakewalk for us. It better be at this level.
Yeah.
But in order to throw 350, 350, 350 to get a par, now you're talking like that's tough to or even 300, 300, 300.
With OB and stuff around.
Yeah, exactly, to be able to get par. Like that is a tough task to do. Doable, and if you do those shots, you're getting there. But at one point, you're going to have to throw one really good shot or one really great shot or a bunch of solid shots in a row. You know what I mean? So I feel like the distance is what is costing hole 18.
I would agree with you too.
That tee shot is tough. It's through a tiny gap with a freaking limb tree right there. Like it's like kind of a tough shot.
For non sidearm throwers, for sure. Yeah. For a sidearm, it's not the hardest shot. But I will agree with you on, you know, maybe not having that, you know, ideology on every hole. But to me, I think I can pass on 18 on taking away the easy par. I agree with you. I maybe don't want to see that on hole 5 or hole 12 or hole 14. But 18, I think I'm okay with. There isn't an easy way to play for par. Like you have to execute you still have to execute to get a par. Yeah. That would just be my only thing. Last thing I have on course changes. If they need some manual labor, if they need some you know, brute strength to get out there and help them, I'll volunteer the log on hole 5, right of the basket. That log needs to freaking go, man. I saw so many shots that were going to skip OB right, because there's OB over there. There's an OB line over there. I saw so many shots that were going to skip, hit the log parked. And I'm like, that shot was not a good shot. It was fading away. Whether it was, I saw backhands, I saw forehands.
Playing for that,
it
shot?
Was. No, if they're you, not. They're not playing to try to hit a log 2 feet off the ground. They're not. They're not playing for that. It's bumpers. I don't like it. That hole had bumpers on it for bad shots, and I don't like it. Those were bad shots. That log was not there. That thing, those discs were going to skip 100 feet or finish 100 feet right of the basket and BOB. Instead, they hit the log part. Well, so
little,
let's get rid of that log.
Angled OB they had behind the basket. That's what I was pissed about. It like a nice little
directly OB, behind the basket,
and
you're
then
saying?
It just goes, to the left side. And so people were like going
I don't
OB,
know what was
but
going
being
on there.
Safe. I'm like, come on, why didn't that line just keep going? But whatever.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know about that one. So, did you see the Andrew Fish tweet? He was not thrilled. He was not thrilled with the course. He said, "You know what's fun? Scrambling. You know what's not fun? OB right at the bleeping wood line." He did not say bleeping, but this is a family friendly podcast. He was very upset, I believe, after his first round. I think this is a terrible take. We play so many courses that you have to scramble through the woods and all that stuff. It's okay to play a course that not every single hole. And also, let's talk real quick. The rough at this course sucks balls. Not because it's tough. It's because there's thorn bushes, blackberry, rose, whatever those bushes were that just rip you apart.
Oh yeah,
super hard to find your disc. The pace of play would have been so much worse.
Listen,
if
this whole
we had to play through that crap.
In traditional golf, you try to hit a little baby golf ball. A little baby golf ball, for the most part, is going and penetrating into that stuff. When you're throwing a big disc, the randomness of people going in and popping out and having routes to get out of there is just so unlucky, honestly. Everybody who you get
so,
off the
so
ferry,
fluky.
It's so fluky. Anytime you get off of – that's why I'm a big advocate for out of bounds. And the worst penalty ever. If you throw a bad shot, I hope you lose your disc forever. Like, and you get triple stroke. Like, and people know that about me. Like, don't throw a bad shot. But – for people saying, oh, it's natural rough. There's nothing natural about me hitting the same tree, kicking in there, somebody having a wide open gap with a run-up, and me being hugging a tree like this with thorn bushes up my
your butt,
armpit.
Yep.
And butt, yeah. And me trying to – like it's just – it's random. No, we should both be penalized a stroke, come out here, all right, let's reset and play again and see if we can do this again.
Yeah.
If we want to play random woods golf, that's fine. That's part of a woods golf. But if you're on a course like this with manicure fairways, like don't make me go into the bushes. Like it's just
random. Here's the other thing. You know who are the biggest advocates for non OB and like non artificial OB. Guys that don't know how to hit fairways, those are the biggest advocates. They want to be able to spray the disc wherever they can and still make par. And that is not to me elite disc golf course design. To me, I want to see people that can control the flight of their disc, the people that are throwing well off the tee. Those are the people that should be rewarded, and not someone that just threw it 500 feet in the middle of nowhere, and then they're able to get up and down and get the same score as the person that actually landed in the fairway and threw two good shots. So I'll leave it at that. Makes no sense. Coverage. I watched only a little bit of live, mainly because I was under the weather, so I was trying to get my beauty sleep as much as possible, but I did watch some of the live on the final round. I thought it was funny that Nate Sexton brought up the drone camera as much as he did. I don't know if the only reason we should be seeing this much drone coverage is if whoever is the drone operator is like the son of the owner of the Disc Golf Network, or if the drone company is paying the Disc Golf Pro Tour. There needs to be something going on for us to be seeing this much drone coverage. It's not good. 99% of the time, the drone footage is not good. I'd much rather just see a normal flight, not 10,000 feet above, and we're just like ants down here, and we just see this little thing fly. I can't even see it on my phone. That's the other thing. I wonder how many people actually watch live on their phone. I can't see crap on my phone.
I don't know why they have the drone coverage when I don't know why they're showing as much of it as they are. And I'm getting more and more frustrated with the catch cam. I don't want to see any more catch cam. I want the catch cam to be a replay. I want to see the shot, where it goes. Yep. Zoom in on the bad boy. Show me where it's going. Show me the fairway. And then after it lands, I would like to see how it reacted off the ground. Deal. But yep. I don't know why. I don't know how we got to this place where this disc golf thing is filmed with, here's the flight. Okay, switch to the catch cam. Bam, bam. Like, I don't know how that became like just the way that you watch disc golf. I promise you it looks way better.
I hate it.
I think it's because they're not on stands, right? So each tee box, the guy's not there with a tripod videoing the thing, and you get this nice camera shot. I think these guys are actually holding it and moving around, and it's tougher to do. And maybe it's not a great shot or something, but...
Well, they have tripods. Most of them have tripods.
Yeah, that's true. You're right.
They don't have, like, the heavy-duty... They don't have the heavy... They don't have the heavy duty ones, but they have like the.
You go.
What do they call those? Yeah.
You go. Here's the deal. After you throw, get out of the way. Like, throw your shot, get out of the way so we can get this shot. Don't ever tell me to get out of
the way. That would be tough for most players.
I would.
Yeah, I was going to say, that'd be tough for. Camera guys, like, hey, Yuli,
that's why they can't do it. Yeah. No posing.
Maybe. Well, because I'm starting to see them put those like boxes behind.
I've never seen anybody
on
there.
The tee pads.
I've never seen.
Oh, they don't go on top of there.
I've never seen anybody on there.
Oh, okay. I
hope they do.
I think that's the ideal camera is like 5 feet. If we can get 5 feet above the thrower, so we're at like 10 feet high behind, the thrower is never in the way. The thrower can do jumping jacks all they want. You're not going to block the shot.
How about next or in 3 weeks? Let's remember this. Once Silas is back, I want him to find a clip where we have both. We have clip of the shot, clip of shot, catch cam. And then we'll just take a vote. Which one looks better?
Okay.
Because I think it'll be unanimous. Like a beautiful wood shot of just like this disc just working its way down the fairway. And then
catch cam is great for like blind shots when the disc disappears and we can't see it anymore.
Or when the commentary or the commentators are talking about it and then you get to see it come in. You know what I mean? You already saw the shot. You're talking about it. And now you see this while I'm talking about the shot. Oh, yeah. See how it comes in soft.
Nice little replay. Blah. Yeah.
Exactly.
Love that. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know what's going on.
Drone,
I'm gonna
but now
keep,
we got drone. Now we got to compete with a drone.
The drone. You know, the next thing we need is we need like GoPro from like right underneath the thrower.
Race
just
car.
Like looking straight up.
That, a little let's, race yeah, car let's, running yeah, through
yeah,
the track.
Just right next to him. Oh, man. All right, Luke Humphreys. Did you hear this Luke Humphreys story? This is kind of wild. So this is recounted from a UDisc Live scoring volunteer that was on Luke Humphreys' card. This happened on Sunday. There was no, like, Luke Humphreys was not in the mix at this tournament at all, so it didn't really have any implications. But this is what the story. So the card was supposed to tee off at 12:27. Now, the starter at this tournament, because hole 18 was right next to us, the starter was doing some weird stuff where, like, we were waiting a lot of times for hole 18, and so we weren't actually teeing off on the correct time. We were a lot of times teeing off a minute, two, whatever. This ended up happening to where it delayed this card to 12:30. Their tee time originally, 12:27. They ended up actually teeing off at 12:30. At 12:27, Luke Humphreys wasn't out at the tee. But they hadn't started yet. At 12:30, the card gets called off with the first player teeing. Luke was the next person up. And as he is being introduced, he is running up and runs on the tee and makes his shot. The card moves on with no issues, no delay, other than the delay that the starter had given because of hole 18. And then on hole 3, the tournament director, Nate Heinold, shows up and tells Luke he is going to get a par plus 4 penalty for being absent at the start of the round. The players on the card then spend 5 minutes arguing with Heinold on hole 3's tee pad about how they don't agree. Luke and the group then spend 20 minutes after the round at the scorer's table trying to figure out how he decided that Luke didn't make the start of his round when he was there on time to throw his first shot. Luke asks for Heinold, and then it goes on to more like stuff that, you know, is just he said, she said about, you know, whatever. That stuff I don't really care about. Okay. To me, this is pretty cut and dry. And I think this, you know, hopefully this scenario, the PDGA or the Disc Golf Pro Tour, someone needs to step in and make a little bit more of a well-rounded when we need to be showing up at the tee time. Because I don't think, because this is what the rule says right now. This is rule 811.F.5. If a player is not present at the start of the round for their assigned group, the player is considered absent and does not play the hole. A player is also considered absent if the player has not played the previous hole and is not present when their group is ready to start on a hole. The absent player receives a score par plus 4 for each hole not played.
Open for interpretation.
They need to make that. Yes, they need to make this a little bit more concrete, because to me, I don't think showing up 30 seconds, 15 seconds before your name is being called is what we should be doing. I don't think it looks good. I just don't think it's what we should be doing. Also, we're trying to figure out who's doing scores, right? Like, that's something that you have to figure out before you start. So if everyone on your card shows up in this, like, you know, crazy theory or a crazy scenario, everyone shows up 15 seconds before the tee time, how are you're figuring out who's keeping score as you're walking down to hole one, I guess? I mean, well, that's to me, this is like a cut and dry thing.
Crap.
Like, there needs...
Part of that's
what's
bull
that?
Crap. Like, who's keeping score? What? How about we get this figured out and we all keep score? So there's no more, oh, I'm keeping it today, you're
hey,
keeping
I'm
it tomorrow. How about
I'm
we all
you.
Keep
I'm
everybody's score? Like a normal sport. Like, why does it have to be this crap on my phone that I have to put in? What if my phone goes dead? What if my phone dies? And then the next guy's phone dies? Like, why am I having to keep it on my... Like, this is something that you can write on a piece of paper.
I hear you.
And then we all keep each other's score. There's no more... Like, there will never be a bad scorecard ever. Do you know how many times I have to redo it on that whole 18? Because I messed it up or somebody on my card messed it up to be like, yeah, these don't match. Well, that... Okay, so what about the U-Discer? The U-Discer shouldn't matter at all. 0% should have no input on what your score actually is. Because he shouldn't even ask you. He shouldn't be like, hey, was that circle two? Some people ask us, hey, is that circle two? How far were you? I tell him, hey, your best guess, don't ask me again. Thanks. I don't want to say that I was, yes, I was in circle two all day today. I made two of them.
Majority of pros do not care about their stats.
Yes, but so we all keep each other's score. Then this wouldn't be an issue of, okay, we're getting there beforehand. Also, I think we talked about this before. Beforehand, unless there was a change to the course that's not in the caddy book, don't tell me a spiel about the course. It's my job to learn the caddy book and understand how to play each hole. And when I step up there, it should be
I don't want to know about closest to the pin.
I should be like this. I should be just like this. I'm ready to compete. Hey, good luck today. If that's what
I don't want to know about macaroni dinner later. I don't want to know about local entertainment.
Yeah. Hey, do you like sidearm on this or should I throw a turnover buzz because it's really windy today? We didn't practice. I need to be doing this with my caddy. I don't need to be hearing about all this stuff, which I understand why, but it's all nonsense.
I don't want to hear about the raffle.
Here's the thing. We're playing a professional event. Like when you work for somebody, you already know your job. You got introduced to the job. You show up and then you get it done, right? You talk to your boss and he's like, here's what I need from you. This is what you came in to do. Okay, boom. And then you don't talk to him for the rest of the day and you're just sitting there grinding out your job for the most part, right? If you're in construction, I need to build this house. Your Bob tells you what to do or your job, or your boss tells you what to do. You go and you do that thing. Like I already know what I'm supposed to do. I'm a professional disc golfer. I don't need you to tell me what the rule book says unless you changed it for some reason. Hey, there was a change to the course. This is what you need to know about the change. Perfect. Otherwise, call my name and it's my turn to go. Sorry, rant, but
the bees is nice though. The bees is nice.
Thing,
knowing that there's like ground bees on certain holes, that is actually, I will say, I want to know about that.
Yes, that is.
Tell me about that.
Yeah, there are, hey, just so you know, 4, 5, and 6, there's bees on those. Have a good round. I'm going to call you in order. Paul Uleberry, you're up, and then I'm ready to go. I don't need to be like,
I love that.
Nobody wants to keep score, too. I keep score every single time I play because everybody's like, it's like this awkward thing.
No one wants to do it.
I'll keep score again. Yes, that's fine. You know why I say I'll keep score? So we don't have this awkward thing and we can get onto the tee and throw our shots.
We just go.
Anyways.
I'm with you. The Luke Humphreys thing, I think, again, they just need to concrete this out, whether it's the Disc Golf Pro Tour or the PGA or whoever. Someone needs to figure it out to be like, hey, everyone needs to show up 5 minutes before their tee time. If you're teeing off at 12:40, you need to be...
And I don't like that either. I think whatever your tee time is, what if I'm late and I got stuck in traffic and I get there right and they call my name? I should be able to pull out my disc and throw my shot. That's my tee time. I'm there on time.
Yuli, if 12:40 is your tee time, if 12:40 is your tee time, okay, and everyone knows that you have to be at your tee time 5 minutes before, or let's just say a minute before, whatever it is, and you don't show up at that time, it's the same thing as you showing up right now at 12:41. It's the same exact thing.
It's not 5 minutes before your tee time then. Your tee time is now, instead of 12:41, it is 12:46 is your tee time. Because then they will go through the same
tee time. The tee time is for the fans. The tee time is for the fans. The tee time is specifically for the fans to know when you tee off. It shouldn't be when we show up to the tee, is what I'm trying to say. I don't think our tee time should be – I don't think we should all – us showing up 15 seconds before we throw, I think, is not good. I don't think that's a good look.
No, I've never done that. Unless I was late.
I think it looks bad.
Yeah, sure, it looks bad. It looks like you're unprepared and blah, blah,
wow,
blah.
Wow, how are you late? Aren't you warming up at the course?
Time. That's your tee time. You should be able to do cartwheels and do jumping jacks and do whatever you want beforehand. And when they call your name, if you're not there, get stroked, sure. But you should. There shouldn't be this
I know, but
thing.
They're calling your name now 5 minutes before. They're calling your name 5 minutes. So that's now your official time.
That's
like
what
you
I'm
have your
saying.
Official
so
time, and
that.
Then you have your tee
so
time.
So then just say, hey, guess what? Your tee time is 12:46. You have to be there 5 minutes early so you can figure out how to do a digital scorecard.
I mean, what are we talking about here? What are What other sport are you showing up when the game starts? Like, oh, the game starts at 8 o'clock. So if I'm playing a game at 8 o'clock, I can show up at 7:50. What are we talking about here? Everyone, there's different times
for other sports as well, when you need to show up for the actual game. It's different.
Yes.
And, no, if I'm playing basketball, and the game starts at 12 o'clock, and I'm sitting there shooting free throws right here, and they're like, okay, before you're done with that, you have to come over here 5 minutes beforehand, and you have to talk about how we're keeping score today, Paul. And we're going to tell you about the nice coupons.
Well, they do
have
kick you off the court.
They do kick you off the court at a certain time. No, I'm in the game. I better be. It doesn't matter if I run out there and they're about to do tip off. There's a time limit for me to be on there. And if I make it in my time limit, then it's time for me to go. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if I jump on.
I feel like we're agreeing here. I feel like we're agreeing.
Maybe.
We feel like we're agreeing.
Sometimes we have a weird way of agreeing, which I like.
No, I think we are agreeing because I don't want to show up 5 minutes before to hear about the macaroni dinner later tonight for all the players. That's not why I want to show up five minutes before. Well, if they do, we'll smack them in the face and tell them to stop doing that. I want us to pick a time to where we can show up to where it's just like, it's a little bit, I used to think it's a little bit more professional having everyone there. So when the time is called, someone's not sprinting
in to their tee time and not getting penalized. It's called the 2 minute warning. You had 2 minutes before your real tee time.
There you go. 2 minutes. That's perfect. 2 minutes. Boom. If you're not there before 2 minutes, have you ever done that? Stroke them.
Have you ever done a shotgun starter? Or are you too new?
Actually, find them. Find them. Don't stroke them. Just find them.
Have you?
No.
You've never. So.
Yes. I mean, I did. No. I did at. I did at DMC last year when we got.
I'm talking like a smaller tournament.
When we restarted one of the
where
mornings.
Everybody's chilling and then everybody yells two minutes.
No.
That was the way we did it back in the day. 2 minutes is what you had.
I think
everybody
I've done like local.
If you were putting, you'd get stroked. And then you had to wait.
I like that.
And then sometimes our 2 minutes would last like 5 minutes, and we're like, who's going to yell 2 minutes? This is bull crap. And then finally you'd hear one like way off in the distance and be like, I think that was it. 2 minutes. And then you're going, and then some people weren't going. It was a nightmare. I had to deal with it for like 15 years.
Seems like you need an air horn in that scenario. All right, let's jump to FPO here. We went off the rails there a little bit. Sorry. We're back on it. Own Scoggins. Takes it down. She wins without a single birdie on any par three. Didn't birdie any par threes all tournament. Ended up only taking one bogey the entire tournament. That whole that bogey ended up actually being her final. Wait, that's not even accurate. She took two bogeys.
All right.
Okay. Normally I'm just going with Stat Mando 100%, but she bogeyed hole 16 and she bogeyed hole 18. So. Maybe she only bogeyed, let me see. Did she only bogey two times? No, she bogeyed hole five. I don't know what stat I pulled. I have no idea what that stat is. She has a lot of bogeys. The one stat will be accurate, though, is she did not birdie any par three. She never took a two.
Wow.
Yes, that is accurate, and that is from Stat Mando. So credit to Stat Mando. That is accurate. No birdies on any par threes, but ends up shooting 25 under, takes it down. Your top 10 was Ella Hansen, Kat Murch, Missy Gannon, Holland Hanley, Jennifer Allen, Maria Oliva, Sarah Hokum, Haley King, and Jessica Weiss. There was your top 10. You also had another massive tournament going on, mainly why we didn't see a lot of the European players over at the first playoff event, which again, I don't understand these playoffs. I don't think anyone does. If someone understands these playoffs, please let me know. Cause I just looked, do you know how many people are, there were 70, what did we say? 76 people. Yeah. 76 people in the field at, the first playoff event. Okay. I thought I was under the impression that moving on would be like difficult, right? Like, it's like a playoff. So now moving to MVP, there's going to be like less people playing at MVP. I think there's like 68 people playing at MVP right now. So like 8 people get cut like that. I don't know what's going on.
Nobody's getting cut.
None of this makes sense. None of this makes sense. Like, let's have 100 people at D-Glow, drop it down to 60 at MVP, and then drop it down to your 32 at the Tour Championship.
I got an email saying, okay, just like D-Glow, we're not having a cut at MVP. Did you get that email?
Probably. I don't like it. I don't like four-round tournaments with no cut. What are we doing? Cuts.
No, I don't
cut
like, people. I don't give a crap about any of that. What I care about is the whole year we're making cuts at Massachusetts. That's what it says. The whole year it says we're making cut at D-Glow. Then we get 2 weeks prior to both.
Oh, you're saying last second they change him.
What the heck?
Someone is crying. Someone's crying. I don't know who they are, but there is someone crying. And clearly the Disc Golf Pro Tour cares about this person's tears. Because I don't get it. I don't understand. I don't understand the switching to it.
But Owen, I want to say this. Owen Scoggins, undoubtedly second best player in the world. Second best player in the world. I'm saying it.
I don't think it's close. I don't think it's close.
I think it goes Kristen, Owen, Gap right now. Well, Missy.
After playing these.
Missy's
up there too. But after playing these courses. We might see a world's battle. We might see a world's battle. That's all I'm going to say on FPO. We might finally get what we've been looking for this whole time with Kristen Tatar actually having to go down to the wire.
Imagine if Owen wins the Masters World Championship and then wins the World Championship. I mean, come on. That'd be crazy.
That's gonna be tough. That's gonna be tough for anyone to do. That's gonna be tough.
She could do it.
Okay, so like I said, the European disc. No, she definitely could. No, 1,000%. She could win USCGC too. I mean, she's good enough to win everything.
I'm excited. Anyway,
her game is very good. All right, European Disc Golf Championship went down. This went down in Tallinn, Estonia. I hope I said that correctly. This is why we did not see any of the real top European players playing over at D-Glow, which was, you know, sad if we're trying to build out this playoff thing. You know, you have a huge part of your roster not playing there. Dennis Augustin absolutely just destroyed the field, won by 10 shots over Jesse Nieminen. Big names over there. Albert Tom finished tied for fifth. Nicholas Antila finished tied for seventh. Vaino Makkala finished tied for 10th. On the FPO side, that was where the big storylines for me went down. Did not know this. Kristen Tatar, this was the one tournament, or the final tournament, rather, that Kristen kind of had on her wish list, she said. This was the one that she had not won, I guess, yet. And it being in her home country of Estonia, I think it was adding a little bit more pressure and definitely one that she wanted to take down. Absolutely came out crushing the first three rounds. Her second round was one of her best rounds in her entire career. She had a 16-stroke lead after the first three rounds and then proceeded to have, quite frankly, probably the most emotional disc golf round I've ever seen. It was just un-Kristen Tatar-like, if you will. That might be the best way of saying it. She birdies the first hole, triples the second hole, then proceeds to birdie the next two, then goes bogey, double, double, bogey, bogey. And all of a sudden, her lead is kind of like evaporating right in front of her eyes. If you haven't yet, definitely go check out her posts on Instagram. I think her latest post does a really great job of just kind of going through the emotions that she was going through during that final round. But she just missed tons of putts that final round, threw a bunch of shots OB, really was just off her game the entire time, but ended up, you know, finishing par birdie to win by three shots and took it down. And so a super gutty win there, because I think we've all been there when the rails start going, it's tough. It's tough to get back on the tracks, and she was able to figure it out. So hats off to her.
That's a big lead to blow.
Bro. 13 shots, yeah.
Bro, that's a big lead, dude. Yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Hats off. You better.
Nuts.
Otherwise, you're going in history books as like the biggest blown lead ever.
Biggest choke of all time.
All time.
Yeah. Now, obviously, a bunch of people started going on social media talking about she was injured. She did have some of that, what do they call that? That tape? What do they call that?
KT tape?
Yeah, she had some of that on her throwing arm. So I think some people were worried. Oh, my gosh. Not injured. She said nothing along the lines of any injury or anything nagging her. She basically was just talking about the stress of wanting to win this so bad, and then things not going her way just compounded to, you know, a very poor round. Yuli, they're telling me to have you close all your other browser tabs.
That's what I
open
just
with Riverside. I don't know what that means. I don't know why they're doing that. These people over here are very, very serious, I guess. They take their job very seriously over here. But yes, I think we shouldn't be worried about her coming into Worlds. I think she should be firing on all cylinders. Unless we hear something differently, I think she should be healthy.
Yeah, and I mean, she just checked the last check mark off her career list. That's pretty cool. Listen.
I'm listening.
I don't know how I can't say, like, I don't want to say she's going to win by 10, but at a five-round event, like, how do I not say that?
It's going to be tough.
I just think she's going
to destroy. I just hope it's close. I just give me something close going
Owen's
into the final
round.
Owen's
going to throw a bunch of sidearms in the woods and just drain 45
Missy,
footers.
Missy, Owen, Missy, Cat Merch. Yep. Holland Hanley, let's go. Let's get it going. Yep. Let's make something happen.
Holland
let's
Hanley
make this
out
a freaking
nowhere,
exciting world championship.
They're just coming at, and then all of a sudden, Kristen's in like ninth, coming back two rounds. All of a sudden, she's on the chase.
Oh
car,
my gosh,
heaters.
I would love that. Yep. I would love that. Let's do a quick Disc Golf Pro Tour standings update. Because, like I said, not that many events left. So I kind of just want to talk about maybe like the first seven. Or let's do five. Let's do five and five. So the first five in and the last five out. Right now, the first five in, you have Nico LoCastro, Chris Clemens, Vinyl Makela, Andrew Presnell, and Mason Ford.
Yeah.
Those right now are sitting on the good
the
side
guardians.
Of the bubble.
Yeah, the
ones out. The Guardians. The ones outside the bubble, you've got Robert Burridge, Garrett Gerthy, Yuli, Eric Oakley, Chandler Kramer. These are the people that are just outside the bubble. Now, the point difference, like looking at you, Yuli, the point difference between you being in and out right now is 41 points.
Yep.
With a world championship, which is counting at 1.5, and then with another playoff event counting at 1.5, there are a lot of points up for grabs, a lot of points on the table. If any of the guys just in the bubble play poorly, and any of the guys just below the bubble play well, we will see a switcheroo. I think is what I'm trying to say.
I like what you said first.
A switcheroo.
Yep.
Yeah. So something to keep an eye on. And I think at this point, I believe UDisc, if you want. I think after each round, they start putting projected points, which is awesome.
That is cool.
You could see at the end of each round like, right now where your standings would be.
You could be on 18 at MVP being like, I have to go for this birdie to make the Pro Tour Championship.
Yep.
That's cool.
Yep. I love that. Very, very cool.
I really don't want to have to birdie that
okay,
hole
quick
to make the championship, by the way. Or do
I would.
Do we want
that means I'm close.
Right, because I don't know.
Yes.
I don't know now.
Yes.
I want to just be in, or do I want to, if I had to right now,
I'm,
accept
I'm
the fate.
I'm farther away than you.
But if we had to accept our fate right now.
Like, I want the chance.
You want the, we're taking the chance.
Yes,
or do
I
think
chance.
That I'm just going to get in?
Yes.
With good play. No, I'll take the chance. Give it to
I know, but if you told me you have to birdie to get in, and I feel like my odds are way better birding 18 and getting in than just like letting the cards fall as they will right now.
But one top 10, you're probably.
Because I need to play. Maybe. Maybe. So. It's you also need the other people above you to play bad.
Yeah.
Because if they top 10, then your top 10 means nothing.
And then the people in front of you, Mason Ford, is a world's guy. Like that guy is top. Yeah, like for like 3 years in a row, he's taken top 10 at Worlds.
I mean, Nico's gonna play good.
Scrapper.
Presnell's probably gonna shred Brewster. I mean, it's gonna be tough. All right, want to do a quick shout out to Jim Palmieri's. Oh, I'm gonna say that wrong.
Jim Palmieri.
Do you know how to pronounce that name?
Palmieri.
Jim Palmieri, 50th American Flying Disc Open silver event going down this weekend in Rochester, New York. Now, I want to address a tweet that I was. I first want to say that I hope the event goes well. I hope everyone enjoys the event. I hope all the spectators that show up have a great time. I hope it goes well. And I'll say us as professional players, we get to pick our schedules right now. Some tournaments are way more incentivized than others. And unfortunately for this tournament, this has nothing to do with the actual tournament, has nothing to do with the course, has nothing to do with the community of Rochester, New York. It simply has to do with scheduling. They put this tournament in Rochester, which I believe is like 6 to 8 hours. I think it's like a 6.5 hour drive from where we are right now.
It's not that far.
That tournament's going to end on Sunday. That is far. No, I was saying 6.5 hours, saying that is kind of far. Because that tournament ends on Sunday. Unless you're going to drive through the night, you're probably going to most likely show up on sometime Monday. And that gives you some of Monday and Tuesday to practice for Worlds on two courses. Not a lot of time. Not a lot of prep. And it is what it is, man. It was poorly timed. I do want to shout out the crazy tweet of the week. This came from John Anderson. This was in a reply to my tweet saying Toronto is legit. Me, Gooseman, and Ezra stopped in Toronto on our way over here, and it was just a picture of the skyline. And his response to my picture of the skyline of Toronto was, "Thanks for bailing on this week's Silver Series. And a big F to all the other pros who couldn't bother for making this weakest field all year. And no FPO. Zero respect. Hope rains all day in Toronto." I'm guessing it's a local person in Rochester that was kind of upset. Now, I get maybe some of the people that are upset because some of the pros that maybe backed out of the tournament super late. I think I dropped this tournament well in advance. I want to say I dropped this tournament maybe a month, maybe 2 months ago. So my name hasn't been on the list for a while. Now, the question, why was your name on the list at all? When we sign up for the tour card, it signs you up for everything. You get signed up for everything. And then we have to go in and manually tell the Disc Golf Pro Tour, we're not playing this event. So that kind of, we normally do that a month or 2 months in advance. Some people do it a week before. And so I get the frustration maybe from some people that are like, oh my gosh, like all these people are coming to play this tournament, sick. And then they look the next day and all those people have dropped. I get that frustration, but it is what it is, right, Yulia? What were we supposed to do?
It is tough. I'll say this. See the people on the list, buy tickets to see those people, see them drop. Not okay. Yep. But on the other side, like I think I dropped it three days ago. I think I dropped.
Okay.
I wasn't sure if I might go. I was thinking I might go there.
Uh-huh.
After D-Glow, I was sitting Sunday night and I was like, yeah, I'm not going. Like I'm too stressed. This was a tough week. You know, all the stuff we have to do at D-Glow with all the signings and this and that and disc release and... I was just like, no, I need time to digress. I need to go home. for a few days, and that was my decision. Guess what? I'm allowed to make that decision.
Do you think they sell tickets too early?
I don't know. I don't know when they sell tickets.
Could that solve the problem if they don't sell if they don't open up tickets until the Monday before the tournament? So no one's buying tickets 2 months in advance, being like, all these people are coming. Oh my gosh.
It's sports. Some people drop, some people don't. Listen, I bought a ticket to go watch LeBron last year, right? Bought a ticket. Was injured, didn't play. That sucked.
Yeah.
But it happened.
Yeah, I mean, the injury still went to a sporting event, right?
And there were still awesome players, yeah. And I got to watch basketball, and I had a great time. Happens.
I'll throw my name in the mix because I don't want to wish any bad juju on anyone, but you might be showing up to Worlds to watch me play and I might get injured literally Tuesday.
Yeah.
And I'm dropping, right? Like that could happen. So the injury thing I can see for sure, but he was not very happy.
It wasn't planned very well. Listen, the only reason
you can't have a tournament the week before Worlds, especially when it starts on Wednesday.
It would be really smart for me to go there to try to get points right now. Really smart. I had to weigh that option with the fact that I was a little burnt out after D'Lo, and I have the World Championships coming up. How am I supposed to be burnt out when I have the World Championships coming out? Listen, there is three things you can do in this game to make any sort of effect or any sort of mark. Three things. Work your freaking butt off for years and years and years and years and years. Okay? That's one way. The next one is, I think there's just two. You work really, really hard for a long, long time, or you win the World Championships. Like, that's it. There's no other way to make money in this game. There isn't. You could, like... That's it. That's all. And for the longest time, for 15 years, that was the only way you could ever make any money is if you won the World Championships. It's the biggest thing in our game. It sucks, but that's the way that it is. It's our biggest event. If you want to have your name on a disc for the rest of your life, that's the only way to do it. It's the only way.
Yeah, I think the only two events that I'm going to be, you know, the only two events I'm going to be there a week before they start, World Championships and USCGC. Those are the only two. And I think USCGC, there's another silver event potentially before that one, or maybe there is a completely off week. But those are really the only two events. And I think those are probably the only two events for most players as well. And there's a reason for that. So if I'm the Disc Golf Pro Tour looking to, you know, reschedule moving forward, change some things up, Probably be an off week.
What would your life look like, Brody, if you won the world champ? Just to give this guy perspective, what would your life look like after you win a world championship in Vermont? How would it change?
Well, for me, it wouldn't really change like me financially at all.
No, I'm saying
like,
far as publicity, different things like
that. Yeah, now I think for some, I would say it would be a much bigger impact for a lot of other players than myself. And so, like, I'm kind of an anomaly in that fact. But if I did win, I mean, there's not a tournament that is even close to having the impact that would have. It would be a massive accomplishment. But also, too, I think it would be something that would even potentially stretch outside of just disc golf. Right? This is something that I could potentially move on to other media outside of disc golf to talk about it as well. So it would be a massive, massive thing, not just for myself, but also for disc golf. I would say for the majority of other players, though, if they won, it is literally life-changing for some players, of where you could literally have someone be like, I am not touring next year. I am done. And then they win a world championship, and then it's like, never mind. I'm going full in on disc golf next year. So it is completely life changing for the majority of people on tour.
And so this Yahoo who tweets out, he hopes it rains on you because you're trying to get ready to change the game.
Well, joke's on him. I'm not in Toronto anymore. So
you're potentially trying to change the game for the better. Like, come on, dude.
Yeah.
But did it rain
on
you?
Kind of crazy. No, no rain in Toronto. We filmed an awesome video. It'll be coming soon, so make sure to check it out.
Did you play Toronto
YouTube.
Island?
Yes. Oh, sick course.
Fun, huh?
And we talked about how this could be like a silver event. Like, oh, you could spruce it up a little bit and make it a sick silver event
that
in the future.
Awesome.
So, Will Schustrick posted on Instagram saying that he will be playing this year at USCGC. That's awesome news. Great to see. There was some talk about him earlier, about him like coming back, and then I don't know what happened. But awesome to see him back at USCGC. He's not old. Like, it's not like he's past his prime. Like, he could make a comeback for sure, and that would be an incredible story.
Dude,
if he got himself back in the mix,
unbelievable. He was unbelievable. Like, I'm talking shots that were like not supposed to be thrown. He was way before his time. Way before, or before his time, or way before.
How do you say that?
Like, he was before.
He was way before his time.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah. No, I think that might be the right way of saying it. Something along those lines.
you guys get what I'm saying.
Someone knows what you're talking about.
I hope so.
Trevor just launched a new channel. So shout out to Trevor. If you haven't, go subscribe to Trevor's new YouTube channel. He's going to be posting mostly disc golf stuff, but it'll be a little bit separate from the foundation content that he normally posts. So if you are a big fan of Trevor, go check out his new YouTube channel. I don't think he has enough subscribers to have a name yet, because he literally just created it. So best thing to do is probably go on his Twitter, or if you literally just search Trevor Disc Golf, it will pop up as or Trevor new channel Disc Golf, it should pop up his latest video that he just did. All right, we have a couple of listener questions, and that is going to wrap us up this week. Here's a question from Dante. He says, is there a policy for players and officials spoiling tournament results before people have a chance to watch on posts? I'm wondering how long I have to avoid Twitter when I miss a live broadcast. Was this a sarcastic post? I could not tell, Yuli.
No, he's being serious. So the answer
he's being serious. Okay.
Yeah, the answer to that is we're adults and sports happen live. That's how they happen. And I'm sorry, but when I'm looking for results on the golf, I watch golf every weekend, or I try to. And I find out that somebody won, I give zero you know what. Zero. Like, I don't understand why.
Yeah,
that's
are
such
you mad?
Big...
Are you mad at that person, or are you mad at yourself for spoiling it? I feel like I'm mad at myself for spoiling it. I'm never like mad at that person for talking about something.
I've always, the fact that we have live and people still don't watch the live and they watch post produce, which helps me. I mean, that's one of my jobs is to commentate on post produce product. But for me personally, I've never watched a post-produced product in my life that wasn't disc golf. Ever. The only time I've ever done it is on ESPN when they're showing me highlights. Like, I just don't.
Yeah, or I'll stumble across like a random CrossFit from like 2018. I'm like,
or like
I'll
a
watch,
UFC fight where
this.
I want to see the dude get knocked out, you know? Where I want to see like how it happened.
Yeah, you go back and
I don't know.
It's definitely harder nowadays to like to not get spoiled by live sports. It's way harder now than it used to be. That's for sure. All right, Jackson Clark, do you like the idea of a Netflix show like Drive to Survive or Quarterbacks for disc golf? Do you think that is even possible? Seeing how it made F1 explode in the U.S., I think it would be awesome for the sport.
Well, it depends on who you had on there, first of all. Like, I think there's room for it, but I don't know what, with the personalities we have in disc golf, I don't know.
I would say this. I would say the lifestyle, the things that happen in Drive to Survive is very entertaining. There's a lot of stuff going on, very entertaining. I think you could make one episode, like you could do a 1.5-hour documentary of like what it's like to be a pro disc golfer and have a couple different people and mesh it all together. I don't think this would work week to week basis. It's most people there's not enough crazy stuff happening. Mm-mm. I don't think it would attract people outside of the sport. I think maybe some people in the sport would like to watch it, but outside of the sport,
you'd love it.
Yeah, I don't think it would really make sense, and I don't think that's gonna like make people all of a sudden be like, "Oh, I need to go watch disc golf." All right, Jacob says, "Should Canada have a few tour stops?" So I think right now, I believe Prince Edward Island. What is that? Is that what that's called? You know what I'm talking about? Is that called Prince Edward Island?
I don't know. I'm not looking. Tasmania at your Open.
No, I wasn't. I was. It's not on my screen. It's called the Tasmania Open. It is in Prince Edward Island, which is in Canada. Yeah. Okay. So there's one silver event this year in Canada. Does Canada need more events? Should we have something in Toronto? Should we have something out in? I'm blanking on the name. Vancouver.
I love Canada.
Should we try to make more events up there?
I think it makes sense, especially after Diglow. Let's go to Toronto.
Yeah, we're real close.
Toronto's an amazing city.
It wasn't that bad. Dude, Toronto was awesome. Yeah. Toronto was very cool. Yeah.
The Raptors, dude.
Let's go
about the Raptor.
Here's the thing, Yuli. The field is so crazy this upcoming week, we're not doing picks.
Okay.
I'm just not doing it.
It's not.
I'm refusing to do picks, but I will recap last week's picks. All right. Eagle got me 3 with his second place. AB got me 1 with his 9th place. You picked a winner again with Simon Lizotte. Back-to-back weeks for you. Congratulations. And you got 3 points for Cole Rodalin, which brings now you into a pretty commanding lead, 92-85. However, we've obviously World Championship coming up. Those are double points. Massive, massive points on the board coming up. So that's where we're at right now. You are kind of dominating me a little bit here towards the end of the stretch. I have gone into a little bit of a cold funk. I need to bounce back. But we're going to take a week off. We're going to give myself a little bit of time. I'm going to crunch the numbers, see what we're looking like, and come back next week stronger with my picks.
Because you never know.
But do you got anything else?
If somebody's going to drop due to injury. Rainy guy.
Yes.
Sorry.
I will say it is nice that we do our picks on Wednesday. It'd be a lot harder to do our picks on Monday than on Wednesday. Do you have anything else? Did we miss anything?
Can we do our podcast next Tuesday since we play on Wednesday?
I was literally just going to talk to you about that. I think what we should do, I think we should try to, because my Airbnb is absolutely disgusting. It's very sick. So I think what we should try to do is maybe try to get one or two guests next week. I've got a couple people of mine. We'll talk about it off air. Maybe people listening to the show can tweet us about who they would love to listen to going into Worlds. And if you're watching on YouTube, comment down below. But I think we maybe have a couple guests leading into Worlds talking about, what it would mean for them to win. And we do the show, we record it on Monday and then we release it on Wednesday night or something. I think that might be the play. I do not want to do it after my round on Wednesday.
No.
You're just saying you're not going to do it. I said I didn't want to. You're just saying you're not doing it. Okay.
I just told you I didn't go to Rochester. We will plan on podding. Just kidding. I'll do it.
We'll plan on filming on Monday, so it will be a little bit of a pre-recorded episode for you guys, but we'll hopefully have some good guests on next week going into the World Championship. And make sure you watch the American Flying Disc Open this week.
Show your support
for Rochester. And I'm curious. I mean, it's going to be a wide open tournament. Yeah. That is for sure. And I will say this too. There is a little bit of a lure. I'm not picking. No, I'm not picking.
For the
I refuse.
Rochester?
But I will say there is a little bit of a when you go and watch, again, when you watch these top level players play on these courses, you rarely see kind of mistakes happen down the wire. We might see some mistakes. We might see some crazy stuff happen at the end of where one of these people that haven't been in contention to win a tournament all season is like right there in the driver's seat.
Matteo
so
was still
it could be it could have
list.
Some fireworks.
He's gonna win.
He's on the list right now.
He was on the list. I think he's gonna
I don't think he's playing. There's no chance he's playing.
He might be playing.
There's no chance. He doesn't need the points.
Really? Well, maybe he hasn't won an elite series. This is
it's not an elite. It's a silver. That's no one's going to care if he wins
That's not what everybody's saying, bro.
All right. Fair enough. All right. Well, that's all we got for you this week, guys. Thanks so much for tuning in. We appreciate everything. If you haven't already, make sure you subscribe to the channel. Drop a like. We don't really talk about that much, but on YouTube, if you can like these videos, we really appreciate it. And then drop some ratings on your Apple Podcasts, Spotify, whatever you listen to on here. And we appreciate you guys so much. And we will see you next week for Worlds, baby. Get ready for it.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of one. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board. In Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with Privacy Mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board. In Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course.
Right again. Now, you're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius. Only you could find... Oh, there it is. Drawing Board or...
Miro. All our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's won.
For a limited time, visit Miro.com/brainstorm now and get a free business plan trial to unlock even more brainstorming tools like private mode and voting. That's Miro.com/brainstorm now.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi, it's Martha Stewart. You know, I spend a lot of time thinking about dirt. At 3 a.m., at all hours of the day, really. What people don't know is that not all dirt is the same. You need dirt with the right kind of nutrients. New Miracle-Gro organic raised bed and garden soil is so dense, so full of nutrient-rich, high-quality ingredients. Miracle-Gro is simply the best.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley. For the love of home.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger. For the ones who get it done.